Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, December 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, County leads region in bridge strikes. TxDOT. Each collision costs taxpayers around $300,000 in infrastructure repairs. By Stuart Doreen. More than 58% of bridge strikes in the Texas Department of Transportation's Odessa District since the start of 2020 have taken place inside Midland County. TxDOT reported Tuesday that 17 bridge strikes have been recorded inside Midland County in the last 2 years, including the one Monday that happened at Farm to Market Road 307 and Interstate 20 when an overpass was hit by an oversized load. It was at least the second that happened inside Midland County this month. All told, there have been 29 across six Odessa District counties. There have been 17 in Midland, 7 in 2020, and 10 in 2021. The next most have taken place in Ector County, 6, including 2 this year. Ward County rounds out the top 3 with 4. Bridge strikes are nothing new in the area. In 2018, a Reporter Telegram article stated there had been more than 100 bridge strikes of varying degrees in the Odessa District over the previous 7 years. TxDOT has previously stated oversize and overweight load permits are issued by the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles, not TxDOT. The maximum load height allowed without a permit is 14 feet, according to the agency's website. A routine inspection is required when a load height exceeds 18 feet 11 inches. Each bridge strike costs taxpayers an average of $200,000 to $300,000 in repairs, and often the cost is not recouped from the vehicle driver or owner, according to December 2020 TxDOT report. TxDOT has attempted to educate the public, but the only real prevention is when people take personal responsibility to do things the right way, TxDOT spokesperson Jean Powell said in a previous article, adding that oversized load permits are required by law and permitted routes must be followed. In the longer term, bridge strikes will be less frequent because the long-term overhaul of I-20 is expected to include underpasses converted to overpasses at 8 locations. This article is entitled, Crude Recovers to Climb Above $71. Omicron Leaves U.S. Oil Demand Largely Untouched. From Bloomberg. Oil climbed with equities as traders resumed buying risk assets following a two-day rout. Futures in New York closed up 3.7%, trailing around $71 a barrel. Crude rallied as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson said he doesn't plan to impose new restrictions on activities before Christmas. Volatility has surged as the market tries to assess the severity of the new strain's impact, with price moves amplified by low end-of-year trading volumes. West Texas Intermediate for February delivery rose $2.75 to trade at $71.36 at 4:47 p.m., after settling at $71.12 a barrel in New York. Folks are booking their profits or end-of-year losses and just waiting for the restart after the new year, said John Kilduff, founding partner at Again Capital LLC. Crude's daily gains come against the backdrop of surging gas and power prices in Europe, with France even burning fuel oil in a bid to keep the lights on. Earlier this year, the oil market got a boost from expectations that there would be a major switch in power consumption toward crude and petroleum products. Still, oil's year-long rally has faltered this quarter, due in part to the emergence of the new COVID-19 strain ahead of winter. The oil market structure is flashing bearish signs, indicating near-term oversupply, which may prompt OPEC Plus to act when the group meets next month. So far, Omicron hasn't dented oil demand in the U.S., which can be seen in the relative strength of physical markets. Sweet shale crudes this week reached the largest premiums against NYMEX oil futures in nearly a year. The gains are driven by U.S. refiners buying supplies to meet increased domestic fuel demand. The new virus variant is spreading quickly and accounted for 73% of all COVID-19 infections in the U.S. last week. But city traffic in Europe held up over that same period, pointing to limited impact so far on oil consumption, despite new restrictions. President Joe Biden will send 500 million free coronavirus tests to Americans' homes beginning next month and dispatch the military to shore up overwhelmed hospitals. Meanwhile, the head of Libya's election commission closed the election committees ahead of Friday's presidential ballot, adding doubts that the landmark vote will take place as scheduled. The OPEC member country also suspended crude exports from two ports after militias shut down the country's biggest field days before the election. The American Petroleum Institute reported U.S. crude stockpiles fell by 3.67 million barrels last week, according to people familiar with the data. However, inventories at the storage hub of Cushing, as well as stocks of gasoline, rose. The U.S. government will release its weekly inventory tally on Wednesday. This article is entitled "Geologist Strikes Gold with His Music Memorabilia Collection." Smalls passed as concert promoter, still driving love for mementos. By Iris Foster, Reporter Telegram. Every Midland oil man has a story about the road not taken and what they shoulda, coulda, woulda done. But probably few, if any, vacillated between promoting concerts and the oil business. What makes Jamie Small's story even more unusual is that he claims he can't carry a tune or dance with any rhythm. Over the years, his business success has fueled his passion for collecting music memorabilia and beyond. So much so that he needed a vacation house with a large barn to contain the overflow. Jamie grew up in Virginia Beach and worked as a promoter for Whisper Concerts. He recalled eating dinner with his parents and, after they went to bed, heading out with pockets of cash to the clubs to listen to and then pay off the bands that he had contracted. At Washington and Lee University, he ran the student activities office and pledged Sigma Nu. So there were opportunities for him to arrange campus concerts for singer-songwriters like Bruce Hornsby. A geology degree brought Jamie to Midland to work for Marshall Young Oil Company. Later, he consulted for Cobra Oil and Gas and ultimately formed Icon Petroleum and Element Petroleum. Jamie claims the first piece of his collection was a maraca from Lowell George after a Little Feet concert. He also collected a set of endorsed cancel checks from each member of that band that were signed by Frank Zappa after they opened one of his concerts. Soon he was collecting signed lyrics, not just guitars. In fact, before items are sent to Las Vegas to be framed in a shadow box, Jamie compiles other memorabilia, such as signed stage passes and picks to surround the guitar. As he surveyed the walls of his office and barn, Jamie said he focuses on bands from his youth, the 60s to the early 80s, and the collection is eclectic because he wanted to cover the music genres during those years. That's why it's not all rock and roll. He has a signed guitar from the Bee Gees, one from Glen Campbell, and one from the Beastie Boys. And he's proud of little things he's found, like George Harrison's sunglasses that his chauffeur retrieved from his limo, a crumpled note from Tom Petty to his future wife, and a song list taped to the floor at one of Bruce Springsteen's concerts. No, he wasn't able to attend all of the concerts of his favorite bands, and he never buys on eBay because there are a lot of forgeries in circulation. He has a couple of scouts who contact him when unusual things come up for sale, like the back pocket of Jimi Hendrix's jeans, autographed coincidentally to Jamie. All of his memorabilia are fully authenticated. A few other items he's collected include signed guitars from the Police, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Kiss, Queen, Grateful Dead, The Eagles for his wife, Modest Mouse for his son, a signed harmonica, sketches, and a handwritten copy of lyrics for studio musicians from John Lennon, a set of drumsticks, cymbal, and a sketch by Ringo for his son, signed lyrics of Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young for his daughter's housewarming, and his prized possession, handwritten lyrics to the Allman Brothers song Whipping Post, which are yellowed and written on three-ring binder paper. Jamie assumes that was a practice copy. So the walls were soon covered in his barn, but he needed to fill the space below. Now comes the man cave on steroids part of his collection. Virginia Beach used to have an oceanfront arcade on 31st Street that Jamie enjoyed. So he obtained the old Brunswick pool table from that venue and gradually acquired rock and roll themed pinball machines, including Elton John's Captain Fantastic and Pinball Wizard, a rare one on the Beatles, and one featuring Kiss. He found a baseball game from the 50s and old pinball machines from the 30s as well. Bowing to pressure, he purchased two first-generation electronic machines, Ms. Pac-Man and Asteroids, to remind him of folks like his college roommate who spent a fortune playing them. Jamie stresses that his barn is not a museum, and everything is to be played with, including his wife's favorite, skee-ball. There's also foosball and shuffleboard, and to tie it all together, he bought an antique Wurlitzer jukebox, had it retrofitted to play CDs, and loaded it with songs from all the bands flanking the barn walls. At the end of the day, Jamie admits, I loved my days as a promoter because I was fascinated by how it all comes together. Drilling a well is like putting on a concert, he thinks. After all of the planning and preparation ahead of time, when you get into a pay zone, it equals a concert day. This is the Nation World page. This article is entitled, U.S. to Distribute 500 Million Free Home Testing Kits, by Josh Boak, Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar, and Colleen Long, Associated Press. Washington. Fighting the Omicron variant surging through the country, President Joe Biden announced the government will provide 500 million free rapid home testing kits, increase support for hospitals under strain, and redouble vaccination and boosting efforts. At the White House on Tuesday, Biden detailed major changes to his COVID-19 winter plan, his hand forced by the fast-spreading variant whose properties are not yet fully understood by scientists. Yet his message was clear that the winter holidays could be close to normal for the vaccinated while potentially dangerous for the unvaccinated. His pleas are not political, he emphasized. He noted that former President Donald Trump has gotten his booster shot, and he said it's Americans' patriotic duty to get vaccinated. It's the only responsible thing to do, the president said. Omicron is serious and potentially deadly business for unvaccinated people. Biden chastised social media and people on cable TV who have made misleading statements to discourage people from getting vaccinated. The outbreak from this latest strain of the coronavirus has required the federal government to get more aggressive in addressing the wave of infections. But Biden promised a wary nation that there would not be a mass lockdown of schools or businesses. I know you're tired, and I know you're frustrated. We all want this to be over. But we're still in it, Biden said. We also have more tools than we had before. We're ready. We'll get through this. Scientists don't know everything about Omicron yet. But they do know that vaccination should offer strong protection against severe illness and death. A cornerstone of the plan is for the government to purchase 500 million coronavirus rapid tests for free shipment to Americans starting in January. People will use a new website to order their tests which will then be sent by U.S. mail at no charge. The $500 million could be increased, depending on developments. It marks a major shift for Biden, who earlier had called for many Americans to purchase the hard-to-find tests on their own and then seek reimbursement from health insurance. For the first time, the U.S. government will send free COVID-19 tests directly to Americans, after more than a year of urging by public health experts. This is the Community from the Front Page. This article is entitled "SCOTUS Lets New Mexico Order Stand" by Greg Storr, Bloomberg. A U.S. Supreme Court justice left in force New Mexico's requirement that many of its healthcare workers be vaccinated against COVID-19, turning away a request by a nurse who said she is opposed to the shot after doing her own research. Justice Neil Gorsuch made no comment Tuesday in rejecting the bid by Jennifer Blackford, who contended the mandate violated her right to bodily integrity. Gorsuch chose not to refer the matter to the full court, a step justices normally take when they see a matter as being a close call. The Supreme Court has repeatedly turned away challenges to state vaccine mandates, including New York's requirement for healthcare workers, letting those rules stay in effect, even if they don't let people opt out for religious reasons. The justices are likely to act early next year on two Biden administration vaccine policies: the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's shot or test rule for large employers, and a separate healthcare worker mandate issued by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Those cases raise different issues about the power of federal agencies. The New Mexico mandate, announced in August by Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, applies to workers in hospitals and congregate care facilities. Gorsuch also rejected arguments from Talisha Valdez, who said she and her children shouldn't have been required to get vaccinated to participate in the state fair in September. The two women filed their challenge jointly at the Supreme Court. Gorsuch is the justice assigned to handle emergency matters from New Mexico. The case is Valdez versus Lujan Grisham, 21A253. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, December 22nd. Hazel Reichle. Hazel Adele Reichle passed away early Sunday morning, December 19th. She was born on October 3rd, 1924, to Theodore Joseph and Mary Leona May Portelli in Marlin, Texas. She was preceded in death by her husband Vernon, two sons Michael and Kevin, and her daughter-in-law, Brenda Pearson Reichle. Hazel is survived by four of her children, Patricia Reichle Epley, Greg, Karen and husband Monty McLean, daughter-in-law Belle Reichle, Scott, and 10 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Wednesday, December 22nd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, with a rosary following at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be Thursday at 1 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, with burial following at Rest Haven Cemetery. The family suggests donations go to Helping Hands of Midland. Professional services conducted by Ellis Funeral Home. Kenneth Allen Peeler. Kenneth Allen Peeler, 92, was born in the Panhandle farming community of Wolfirth, Texas, on August 25, 1929, and passed away peacefully surrounded by family on December 16, 2021. Visitation will take place 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, December 22nd at the branch at NPW. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Thursday, December 23rd at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. The family will hold private graveside services. Kenneth is survived by his two sons, Kyle and wife Pam, and Bruce and wife Allison, along with six grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorial donations be made to the Midland College Foundation, 3600 North Garfield, Midland, 79705, for the Laveau B. and Kenneth A. Peeler ECHS Midland College Endowed Scholarship. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Phyllis Doreen Sheemans. Phyllis Conley Patty Sheemans, 95 of Kingsland, Texas, formerly of Midland, passed away December 16, 2021. Miss Sheemans' care entrusted to Putnam Funeral Home and Crematory, 145 Texas Avenue, Kingsland, Texas, 78639. Yvonne Phillips. Yvonne Phillips passed away Saturday, December 18th at Midland Memorial Hospital. She was born October 22, 1929, in Wills Point, Texas, to Coy Theodore and Dolly Howell Perkins. Yvonne is preceded in death by her husband of 69 years, Billy Brooks Phillips, her parents, Coy and Dolly Perkins, and sister Wanda Rittenhouse. She is survived by her niece, Patricia Ann Brooks, and husband, James Brooks of Porter, Texas, great-nephew, Victor G. Nicholas of Alaska, and great-niece, Whitney Terrell, and husband, Chris Terrell of Houston. She is also survived by numerous great-great-nieces and nephews. A funeral service will be held Monday, December 27th at 2 p.m. at Grace Presbyterian Church, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to Grace Presbyterian Church, 2801 North Garfield Street, Midland, 79705. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Death notices. Billy Stevens. Billy Stevens, 93 of Midland, passed away December 20th. Graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, December 22nd at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Polly Porter. Polly Porter, 95 of Midland, passed away December 20th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, December 26th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be held at 12 p.m. Monday, December 27th at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. UTPB, UT Health, offering twin masters. By Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin and UT Health School of Public Health have made an agreement to offer master's degrees in public health and a master's degree in business administration simultaneously. Dean of the College of Business, Steve Beach, said the master's in public health will be from UT Health and the MBA from UTPB. They can be taken completely online and can be completed in under 3 years. Beach said, there has been a lot of interest in the program. Official enrollment starts in fall 2022. But to be honest, if we have students who are currently in either of the two programs, we'll be able to start advising them on how to put together their degree plans and their schedules so they can complete the dual program, Beach said. He added that there is growing interest in the healthcare industry for people with business training and business acumen to be involved in making decisions and guiding their operations and financial decisions. It's sort of a natural fit for some of the needs that have risen in the healthcare industry as times have changed. It's gotten more and more complex and complicated. It's something that we're starting to see. It aligns with our bachelor's degree in healthcare management here, which was responding to a trend that is just now really starting to catch hold. We feel that business training is really helpful for people across all sorts of industries, regardless of whether they thought that was traditional business or not, Beach said. Interest will likely come from students who are interested in or already in a master's in public health degree and want to add a MBA, Beach said. We'll have some students from our side who get into the program also, but we think that most of them will come from the public health side, he added. There may be some who want to add business training or vice versa. Beach said to earn the two master's degrees separately, it would take 75 credit hours. But by putting the two programs together and sharing some of the courses, the agreement allows us to deliver the two full master's degree as a total of 60 hours to somebody. So that's really the kicker. That's what really draws people into it, he said. Beach said the discussions on this in total started 4 years ago with William Fannin, currently interim provost at UTPB, kicking things off. Fannin said this began before COVID. We have a partnership already with UT Health where a student can get an MBA and a certificate in public health. The certificate comes from UT Health Science Center in Houston, and the MBA being from us. That's been going on 3 or 4 years now, Fannin said. That is, MBA option is building on that certificate program because it takes the same two core classes in the MBA and the same course in the core of the public health degree to shorten the program. And right now, the immediate meaning for the Permian Basin is going to be not much, to be quite honest, because we're tying it into the masters of public health programs that are being offered face-to-face in 6 large metropolitan areas. Why they want to do that with us is there aren't that many online MBAs and UT Health cannot offer an MBA. The MBA, MPH offer is relatively popular right now with wanting to have an in-depth understanding of public health and then being able to manage large organizations dealing with public health issues, and so it builds on that earlier relationship, Fannin said. Ultimately, they hope to be able to have more partners with UT Health. He noted that one of the best ways to improve the health of Texans is to improve how it's managed. I think that those that are getting these two degrees, what they'll have is the depth of Masters of Public Health and the issues of public health. What causes the spread of disease and illnesses throughout the population of all kinds. This is not just on the latest pandemic issues, but they will understand that in depth. They will also then understand the issues of resource allocations and efficiency and how to those interact in the healthcare sector or industry, and hopefully this will lead to maximizing the benefit of the public health programs throughout the country, whether they be vaccination programs or information programs to help those with particular diseases, or whether they be the outreach programs that happen in communities when it comes to particular health issues, mental health, and the like. Fannin said. He added that it will also help improve how healthcare organizations are run and how they help to impact the population health of an area. You're seeing a lot of examples of how to maximize efficiency with COVID, but it's true whether you're talking about mental health issues or taking drug addiction issues or any other major problems facing us in the health area, Fannin added. He said there is growing demand for health care as the population of Texas grows and the population across the nation ages. You're getting a larger elderly population, so there's growing demand, so that calls for resources, and it calls for those to be operated efficiently to maximize the benefit, Fannin said. Quick hits. 66th Annual Live Nativity. Second Baptist Church, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled the 66th Annual Live Nativity from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. today and Thursday, and from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Christmas Music Performances on Air. The West Texas A&M University School of Music will air Christmas music performances at midnight Thursday, 8 p.m. Friday, and 1 a.m. Sunday on Panhandle PBS. Conductors are Pullen and Brandon Farron of Canyon High. Holiday Closures. The Odessa American Business Office will be closed Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. However, customer service will be open from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Call 432-337-7314. The city office will be closed Friday and Monday for the Christmas holiday. Trash will not be picked up on Friday. Customers with rollout carts normally service on Thursday can expect service on today, and those normally service on Friday can expect service Thursday. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once. Apartments and commercials will be serviced twice. The Household Hazardous Waste Facility will be closed Friday and Monday. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. To avoid an overflowing accumulation of trash and debris in dumpsters, citizens are asked to recycle items at the Odessa Recycle Center, 816 West 42nd Street. Drop-off window for cardboard, plastics, paper, aluminum, and tin cans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Trash, debris, and bulky items piled next to the alley dumpsters is illegal and prevents the solid waste trucks from being able to pick up the containers when service resumes. During the holiday period, city trash receptacles should be serviced for perishable items only. For more information, call Martha Cortazar at 432-335-4836. Christmas Eve Services. Emmanuel Baptist Church, 4020 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Christmas Eve worship from 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Friday. Call 336-4439. Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Texas 191, Midland, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service with candlelight worship at 3:30 p.m., 5 p.m., and 6 p.m. Friday. There will be Christmas carols, communion, holiday treats, and more. Community Bible Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, cocoa, and candlelight. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 8860 Andrews Highway, has scheduled its annual Christmas Eve celebration. The Story of Love from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Friday. The Fine Arts Ministry will present an original drama with classic favorite Christmas songs. This is an event that is fun for the entire family. Admission is free. For more information, call 432-368-7714. First Baptist Church, 311 West 8th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service at 6 p.m. Friday. There will be hot chocolate and cookies starting at 5 p.m. Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, has scheduled a Christmas Eve worship service from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, communion, and candlelight. Mission Dorado Baptist Church, 4142 Fodre Road, has scheduled the annual Christmas Eve candlelight service at 5:30 p.m. Friday. Hot cider and cookies will be served after the service. New Dawn Fellowship Church, 2110 East 10th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve candlelight service at 6 p.m. Friday. Listen to the true story of his birth long ago and hear of the hope that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection brings to us. We'll sing familiar Christmas carols together as we hold our brightly lit candles high, reflecting the light of Jesus throughout the world. Celebrate the arrival of 2022 by joining Downtown Odessa Incorporated at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center for the New Year's Eve Downtown Comedy Show and Midnight Countdown. Beginning at 9 p.m. December 31st, Kim Page will host the event that will feature opening acts Mikey Mike on the mic and Sarah Garza, followed by headliner, comedian, and actor Mark Price from Family Ties, Hell's Bells, Trick or Treat, and more. After the comedy show, Strive Entertainment will be spinning music until it's time for the Midnight Countdown and complimentary champagne toast for those 21 years of age and older. The Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center is offering a special rate of $149, which includes a $40 brunch credit for January 1st, 2022, for the night of December 31st. But you must book under the group by December 27th in order to receive this special pricing. Connection Christian to host Christmas Eve service by OA News. Connection Christian Church invites community members for Christmas Eve service with special music by Lone Star Brass and soprano Alyssa Guerrera. Events are open to the public and are held at the Connection Christian Church located at 4241 Tanglewood Lane in Odessa. Christmas Eve at Connection is scheduled for 6 p.m. Friday in the church sanctuary. It also is available on Facebook. This will be a child-friendly service of carols, communion, and candlelight to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. The Lone Star Brass will lead carols in a solo of O Holy Night by soprano Alyssa Guerrero. A child care nursery is provided. The first Sunday of Christmas will include a 9 a.m. worship in the sanctuary and on Facebook, and children's worship at the children's wing. At 10 a.m., there will be adult Bible studies, no children or youth Sunday school, and at 11 a.m., worship in the sanctuary and on Facebook, and children's worship on the children's wing. Death notice. Elida Alvarez Salgado, Odessa. Elida Alvarez Salgado, 83 of Odessa, died Sunday, December 19th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, December 23rd at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, Section C. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. Education section. Nonprofits collaborate on literacy effort, by J.C. Lewis. A new nonprofit for the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin has launched its first initiative with a partnership with the West Texas Food Bank. On Thursday, the nonprofit distributed children's books during the food bank's distribution of food to families with children. Executive Director of the Literacy Coalition, John Trishidi, talked about the important partnership with the WTFB going forward. The goal is to distribute books to hide those to books to those kids whose families are picking up food boxes for Christmas time. We know there is a direct correlation between low literacy and food insecurity. Through the generosity of Diamondback Energy that donated to the cause, he added that reading is the fundamental building block upon which all other essential skills are built. Without reading, math scores decline, workforce development and job creation are low. If we can address literacy as a social need, we know that literacy is also an educational issue, but we want people to start focusing on how literacy can help with social issues. The coalition started in July, and this is one of the first initiatives by the nonprofit. Currently, the organization is raising money to develop programs to reach out to the entire Permian Basin and address literacy needs. The West Texas Food Bank is such an important partner because they have the infrastructure already established, not only in Midland and in Odessa, but in Pecos, Presidio, and the further rural areas we are wanting to reach as well. 600 books were distributed in New Midland and in Pecos in the Crockett Middle School pantry in Pecos. Books were distributed in Spanish and English, including Let's Play, Vamos, Let's Go to the Market, and Presiona Aqui. West Texas Food Bank Director of Marketing and Communications, Craig Stoker, said the food bank is excited to partner with the new nonprofit. Not only are those families taking home food, but they're getting reading material and books for their kids so that they can remain engaged during the holidays. The nonprofit has also commissioned a large study for the Permian Basin. The study will break down literacy rates county by county to help distribute resources accordingly. The nonprofit will focus on adult and family literacy. We really want to move the needle from a social standpoint. We want to collaborate with organizations doing social services already and supplement with books while they are getting needs taken care of. Math Team Competes in Research Challenge, by Rebecca Bell. Jill Ornelas, Arnaldo Montanez, and Parker II were born in different parts of the country. However, when they met each other in Midland as young high school students, it all just seemed to click. Now the trio enjoy spending time together attempting to find mathematical solutions to solve social problems while being mentored by MC Math instructor Jamie Neasley. I moved to Midland when I was in the ninth grade, Ornelas said. AJ was one of the first people I met at Midland Freshman. Then we both were accepted into ECHS, early college high school at Midland College as 10th grade transfer students. It was there that Ornelas Montanez joined two in their affinity for math. They're now high school seniors taking dual credit college courses at Midland College. Last winter, Neasley proposed to the three students that they enter the American Mathematical Association of Two-Year Colleges research competition. They performed practice research projects during February and then in March were given the competition problem, which required students to develop a flight plan to Mars that focused on providing food to sustain a flight crew for an extended period of time and to develop a plan to maintain a future colony. Jail and I were taking trig from Mrs. Nelsey, and we decided to do the competition as an honors project. We convinced AJ, who was taking another math class, to join us. I remember practicing during the February snowstorm. It gave us an opportunity to really concentrate on math modeling. It was the first time any of us had ever done anything like that. When the team received the competition challenge problem, they immediately got to work and developed a plan for establishing agriculture, communication with Earth, and maintenance. Their research contained a shipment plan for the amount of food needed for survival to sustain life for long periods, and meals needed to last crew members for 6 months for the initial trip to Mars. It also included new shipments accompanied by two astronauts to last the crew a year. The team's meal plan consisted of a variety of and nutritional value. They also considered the cost of meals and ranked the meals on a variety nutrition cost scale, which examined the calorie intake of the astronauts. In addition, the project established hydroponics of kale, beets, potatoes, and rainbow trout on Mars to create an intertwined ecosystem providing all the necessary nutrients required for survival while being self-sustaining and relying on minimal support from Earth. Amatik selected the team's submission as one of the top three submissions from Southwest Region. When we told Ms. Neasley that we wanted to enter the competition, we didn't have any idea what type of problem we would be giving, Ornelas explained. It just so happened that this particular scenario about Mars and growing food appealed to our interests. I am from a farming family, and I enjoyed the farming aspect of the problem. AJ and Parker like astronomy, so the Mars aspect really appealed to them. When we started working together on the project, our work flowed and ebbed really well, Montina said. We did a little bit of research, came up with a problem statement, and then discussed the way to solve the problem. This coming May, all three young men will not only graduate from high school at ECHMS, but also receive Associate of Science degrees from Midland College. They all want to pursue degrees in engineering with the hopes of transferring to Colorado School of Mines in August. Montanez is considering petroleum engineering. Two wants to either become an aeronautical or mechanical engineer, and Ornelas is interested in mechanical engineering with a biomedical specialization. Engineers solve problems, Ornelas said. I want to be able to give back to my community by solving those problems. By taking the accelerated curriculum and obtaining an associate degree by the time they graduate from high school, the boys will be able to have a bachelor's degree in less than 3 years. While they have decided to major in engineering, they also have other interests. Both Tu and Ornelas enjoy computers. Ornelas prefers coding and networking, and Tu's hobbies include building computers. Ornelas is also a self-taught musician and plays the guitar, drums, bass, ukulele, and harmonica. He said that he picked up the guitar when he was 12, and he was inspired by his father, who is also a guitarist. My outside interests are a little different from AJ's and Jail's, Montana said. Right now, all my spare time is centered around my labradoodle puppy. These three young men have been a pleasure to work with, Neasley said. They are thoughtful, funny, and engaging, and they make an excellent team, complementing each other's strengths and weaknesses. The problems they used as practice for the competition problem included developing models to describe and evaluate the long-term feasibility of converting existing semi-truck fleets to electric fleets and determining the risks to the U.S. national parks due to climate-related sea level changes. Their projects have included a prioritization of funding when costs are incurred due to these changes. Currently, they are working on a long-term project to develop a theoretical model to address factors leading to teachers' attrition at MISD. They will be looking at factors related to school funding, the boom and bust cycle of the oil economy, and demographic and socioeconomic information for the Midland population as a whole, and the student and teacher population of MISD in particular. They each seem to have a significant desire to better their environment, and the problems they have looked at during our time together are evidence of this. When creating the project for this year, they came up with several ideas, but ultimately chose the teacher attrition problem because they thought that even a theoretical solution would have the greatest impact on their community.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Safety concerns on probiotics. Dear Dr. Roach, I recently read some concerns about the safety of probiotics. I have been taking probiotics for years for irritable bowel symptoms and have no ill effects of which I am aware. Answer: probiotics are bacteria that are normal components of a healthy person's colonic flora, the vast collection of microorganisms that help us digest food. Their effectiveness in irritable bowel syndrome has not been proven conclusively, but many people get relief from symptoms with diarrhea predominant irritable bowel syndrome. Because they are part of the normal colonic bacteria, they are generally safe. However, there have been reports of infections transmitted by probiotics in people with immune system disease. There is a theoretical risk of transmission of antibiotic resistance genes by using probiotics. Allergies to probiotics are often due to components in the preparation rather than the bacteria themselves. I do not recommend probiotics for people with no symptoms, but they can be useful treatment for intestinal symptoms in certain circumstances, such as irritable bowel syndrome, and some people with inflammatory bowel disease when recommended by a physician.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wednesday, December 22nd. Late mother's surprising lifestyle comes to light. Dear Abby, I was never close to my mother-in-law, Agnes. She always came across as very religious and morally upright. She recently died of dementia. It came on so fast that there were things Agnes needed to take care of, but was unable to. My husband was executor of her estate, so we had to go through all her things and have them appraised after she passed. One afternoon, my husband discovered a small black binder tucked in the back of his mother's lingerie drawer. He looked through it, and to say he was shaken would be an understatement. He let me read it. Apparently, his parents enjoyed wife swapping, and Agnes took notes detailing her activities. My husband hasn't mentioned it since, and has left it to me to deal with. I have no idea what to do with it, but we certainly won't share it with his deeply religious brother or our son, who thought the world of the only grandmother he'd known. I hesitate to destroy her property, but I don't feel it'll benefit anyone to keep it. There is no one I can discuss this with, and it's not a subject my husband wants to talk about. Your thoughts, please. Signed, Embarrassed in Oregon. Dear Embarrassed, I agree that it would be of no benefit to your brother-in-law or your son to learn their respected parents/grandparents were swingers, including the intimate details of the encounters. I'm voting for keeping the past buried, along with Agnes. Dear Abby, my adult son Josh has moved into the home I share with my significant other, Tom. Josh is 30 and Tom is in his 60s. Josh has difficulty holding jobs and leaves in fits of anger if someone upsets him at work. This has put me in the middle. When he and Tom get angry at each other, they begin shouting. I own the home we live in, so I could ask both to move out. I would also like to help my son find a job and housing so I can stop worrying about him being on his own with no place left to go. Josh is married. His wife lives with her parents nearby. Josh can't stay there because he made hurtful comments to her mother. I just want us all to get along. During the last fight, I threatened to run away and not tell Tom or Josh where I was. I'm on eggshells every day and don't know what to do. Tom is on disability and I'm still working. I am so frustrated I could scream. Can you help me? Signed, Family Peacemaker. Dear Peacemaker, I'll try, but it will involve you being strong enough to draw a firm line and stand behind it. Insist that your son start counseling for his anger management problems, which are at the root of his employment and marital difficulties, or he will no longer be welcome in your home. Give him a deadline to start, and do not waffle. If you stand your ground, you will not only change the direction of Josh's life, but may also save your own romance. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.